Hey everyone, I'm Harry Sims. I'm the SDR leader at Scratchpad. I've been chasing strangers for meetings for well over a decade. And today we're going to go talk about my 10 rules for outbound on the SDR Game podcast.
In this episode, we are talking about the 10 rules of outbound, what's working for Harry, and what I'm working on with outbound at AgroHappers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man.
And I'm glad finally having you on the show today. And yeah, let's talk about your 10 rules of outbound. I know today it won't be like a practical session like we are currently doing normally on the show, but today with Harry, we're going to have more conversation around outbound in general. But I'm curious, before we start talking about your role specifically, so why did you come up with those 10 rules and how?
Thank you for having me, Elric. And this is like a year overdue, so I appreciate it. I believe autonomy is the key to excellent SDR performance, but it's a balance. So I created these rules to, one, give my team a sandbox to operate in and very clearly explain my expectations. And I suppose that's two, is to like have baseline expectations. And then the final thing is, and this just might be my experience. I know Cognizant have a great SDR playbook. There's orgs that do this, but I've never seen a playbook scale or work for very long. By the time you've written it, trained it, enabled the team, coached it, and then got data, it's old news. So I think thinking scales, like ideas scale and a vision scales, like a way of thinking. And this was my attempt at putting one together. Yeah, I suppose those are some of the reasons.
One of the rules that you have on it that I found interesting was the first one, actually, because outbound is a low volume and a high conversion game. Winning means getting more back, so output. Then you put it input over time to be efficient. Do you think this rule applies to every type of prospecting? When I mean type of prospecting, I mean SMB, mid-market, or enterprise.
Yeah, it's business. That's actually business. You just pick different inputs and outputs. There's actually a video, I've got it. I may share it with you. I don't know if you can link it, of Jeff Bezos talking about this. It's exactly the same thing. So yeah, it applies not just to different prospecting motions, but so basically it's business. It's a margin.
You wrote a post about before starting an outbound play, you have five questions. Would you like to start with the first one? So it's, what buyer experience will I deliver? And actually, I'm curious, what do you start with this one?
I'll take one step back. The reason I put these questions together is I put a link out saying I wanted to do some free coaching. And I did. I've done hundreds of calls over 3 years, just three little bits of advice. But I actually did some coaching. Everyone came to me saying they thought their messaging was off or their call script was wrong. But when you unpack, the problems are much deeper and they're actually downstream. Tactics, scripts, copy, messaging, cadences, steps, etc., is downstream from how you think about the game, the vision, right? Targeting, you know this. Tight targeting is the biggest advantage we have, and you know it because you've been doing this a long time too. Your offers, again, you know this.
Yeah.
And how you're scoring, like the, and again, we're going back to rule one. It's like what good is? How do you know you're winning? Yeah. That all comes before you start talking about copy, cadences, scripts, tactics, blah, 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 tech, channels. That's the stuff that matters. And so I've just been trying to work out ways how I can get people to realize that. And this is the best thing I came up with. But that first thing is my attempt at getting people to build a vision for outbound. And it should really align with your company values and your other sales values. It shouldn't be different. But that's another irony. I'm working with a sales leader at a MarTech company right now, really good guy. I won't say his name. He has a very clear vision for how he wants his sellers to sell, but it does not apply to the SDR team. The SDR team are doing dumb things faster, high volume, horrible. I'm nearly swearing. And it's so funny because it's misaligned.
Yeah.
And that's another thing you see a lot. Like if you look at a company values on their website and then look at their prospecting, that they should be one and the same.
What was the value on the website?
Value may be a customer obsessed.
Okay.
Just an example. But you're bombarding your customers with high pressure, low quality emails. Right. It doesn't make sense. So if you're just starting out on outbound, just answer this one question. The simplest way to do it is to 3 to 5 bullet points on how you like to be sold to. And that becomes your baseline for, hey, here's my do's and don'ts. Here's the experience I want to deliver to people hearing from me, right? And you've got to be very conscious of that with outbound because we are barging into people's lives. So you have to do it in the right way.
I was thinking when I was reading starting another employer, so do you know if your AEs are trained to close outbound deals or so? Because that's something that's a big topic here internally because we are just starting the outbound team. Because that's a change of not mindset, but it's in terms of coaching and training from the AEs leaders. It's outbound deals will be different than on demo request. And that's something you need to understand also because not all the first meeting that you will book will turn into an opportunity or a close business pretty soon, but you need to learn how you need to educate your prospect on the first call also. Discovery and educate. But what I mean by that is you need to understand that some of the prospects you will talk with, they were curious about being on the call, but they are not aware of the challenges they're facing, or maybe they're aware, but they don't know that there is a solution. Something I love to share with my team internally is we're a PLG company, so we get most of the business from demo requests and free tries. And obviously the mindset about those leads, generally they know that they have an issue, they need to solve it. And so the conversation is easier. But when you start outbound, actually, they maybe already have something in place or they maybe don't have anything in place. So the conversation couldn't start the same way because they are not actively looking for a solution.
I see this problem a lot. And it's no different in actual outbound. And it's Josh Braun pain triangle. I say Josh Braun on every single interview I do because we all know he's basically our dad. But yeah, that's who taught me this. The meeting you'll buy where they're at kind of thing. The first meeting is actually probably, and again, I'm no AE expert, it's probably completely different. It's completely different. The best AEs I've worked with are really good at the cost of inaction and they make you feel guilty for not actually, you know, taking action, to be honest. But then you trust them to go on that path with them. And, some of them are incredible at it.
And actually, that's a conversation I had with Tito Bort. We were on the leadership session with Pavilion. And we were talking about that specifically, that the first meeting for outbound shouldn't be like a real discovery call. Yes, you should focus on uncovering some pains, but it's more about educating the prospect.
Yes, absolutely. And that aha moment, Jed is a great example of this. I did business with Jed and gave him the smallest deal he's probably ever done for his warm-up service when he was at Mailshake. That conversation started a year earlier when he asked for just product feedback about Mailshake. And I'm happy to do that. I've obviously seen him about. I actually wanted to meet him. And then he educated me on deliverability. And then when I tried to buy Mailshake as my set, but I couldn't. There was some security stuff I couldn't get through. So it would have been a slightly bigger deal. But like Jed did that in 30 minutes and just created positive recall with me.
Yeah.
And guess where my money's going when I have a need? It's him. He shouts me out on his podcast for the mission slap and all that stuff as well. And that's great sales right there.
Yeah.
And on my little world, but these big enterprise AEs, you know, selling 7-figure, 8-figure deals. That's what they're doing. I'm jealous kind of those guys and girls.
You talk about targeting. So when you say targeting, I imagine that including the ICP, so the company and the buyer persona at the same time? Or?
I actually start with the buyer first. And then I think outbound is inherently one-to-one. That's just how I think. I think the world will catch up one day. I don't know. You ask any ABM people, they'll agree, the good ones. So I start with the buyer first, and then I go to business, and then I try to answer when, and when is very hard. When is the hardest part of this? I'll give an example of one in a minute. And then I try to layer another piece of data, contextual data, technographic data, behavior data. We're in PLG world. We're very, very lucky to have like lots of data to look at. And there's more. Like one of the most efficient outbound thing I've ever done or built used lawsuits, publicly available lawsuits.
What do you mean by lawsuits? So what are you looking for?
I worked for a company called UsableNet. I built their SDR team. It was actually my transformational role in my career. We actually pivoted the whole company to focus on accessibility, which is making digital services available to people with disabilities. Yep. And there's laws around it, and lots of companies get sued about it. So we would capture the lawsuit data, and then that lawsuit data would include which websites had a problem, who was the responsible individual at the company, right? And it included lots and lots of rich data we could use for personalization. And it actually went further because it showed us the lookalikes. If Target's getting sued, you know Best Buy's next, right? It also gave us an idea of if they weren't being sued yet, but their competitors were, then it wasn't a legal issue yet. So you're better off contacting the technical folks, the marketing folks, right? Yeah, or you have a slightly different message from marketing than you did legal. So this sort of data that drives who, why, and when is gold, absolute gold. They also had a time frame in the lawsuit that they had to respond by. This is actually what outbound is. It's so much more about that targeting than it is about your message. And actually, although we have different tactics across all the people in the space, Ryan Reesert, he's a cold call guy, right? But he says, your list is your strategy. Jed thinks this way. Florian thinks this way. You think this way. And it's true. Once you've done it for so long, you know that the targeting is the big driver.
On my side, at my previous company, I was focusing more on the business first and then the individual. And it's not because I didn't want to, but we were starting the outbound motion, and we were selling I was into the data landscape, data industry. So with Databricks, Snowflake, BigQuery, those kind of tools. So it's not a new product anymore, but it's like the industry started like 10 years ago, something like that. So you have a lot of SaaS tools in the space. But my point with that is you still have like companies who are using the old tools from the data industry, like Oracle database or stuff like that. And the first thing I was doing is checking the tech stack of the company, because the tool we were selling to, one thing was integrating with Snowflake, Databricks, or BigQuery. So obviously, if they use Oracle, for example, we couldn't integrate with them. So obviously, it's not a good fit account. So that's why I was doing this way. And the second thing with that also is, in terms of tools, what do they have into that tech stack? Because it gives me an idea if this company is open to new tools, for example. Yes. Because basically, we had a list of 15,000 accounts. So 15,000 accounts, it's a lot. So what I was doing is basically narrowing down the list to those companies who have at least Snowflake, BigQuery, Databricks, and then I could prioritize the list based on, do they use an ETL tool? Do they use, I'm not going to explain all the tools that they were using, but the other tools that you know they're investing in. So like this, I know we can talk to them and they will be more like open to have a conversation versus, yes, we can start a conversation with someone who just migrated to Snowflake and they were using Oracle before, but imagine if they're just starting to switch to the data cloud, it's going to take them maybe 2 or 3 years before they start thinking about other type of tools.
I think if you've got like a big addressable market like that, it makes sense to start with a business. But when I was at Intellimize, we're selling front-end marketing technologies, right? The JavaScript tags in built with pickup, it's gold, right? Joe Chernoff, he's the CMO of Pendo. he shared an email ages ago. It was like, the subject line, I can't remember what it was, if you have X technology, why do you need Y technology?
Yep.
And we used that in Intellimize. It was like, if you have Sixth Sense, why do you need Intellimize? That sort of personalization is so easy and it works. It's a good, simple tactic. But again, what we're confirming the thinking, it starts with who you're targeting. We're targeting you for that reason. Your personalization is driven by your targeting. Some people call it relevance, whatever. It's driven by your targeting.
Yeah, but the way I'm thinking about it is also, I don't remember how you call that in English, but it's not the evolution of a new market because you have the early adopters and then you
chasm,
have...
Yeah,
exactly. That's that. But for this specifically, you have different stages on the market. Depending on the maturity of the market, obviously, for us, we wanted to focus on the early adopters of the technology we are focusing on.
This could introduce another paradigm to targeting. It's where, right? We're both international men of mystery. You know, certain regions aren't usually early adopters because it's cultural, but that even gets to micro regions. I live in Nashville right now, yeah? I know I'm friends with the ServiceNow reps. They are booming here because they're capturing the late adopters that hadn't jumped on ServiceNow yet. Whereas people in San Francisco and London, they're just trying to upsell them, right? They're getting net new deals and ripping out old systems because it took 15 years for them to get on board. Lots of them aren't even in the cloud yet. So these tech reps in Nashville are booming, selling stuff that people in London used to sell 15, 20 years ago.
And if we go back to why the business first, because something we realized at the previous company in the data industry is some of the reps on the team, they were focusing on the same title on those different industries. And for example, one title we were going after were data governance managers or leaders. And that's why I was saying, depending on the stack they were using, because if, yes, that's a good title, but if the stack is pretty old, I would say, it doesn't care if you talk to them because it's going to take, like I said, it can take years just to sell them. So that's why we are focusing on more of first the company and then the buyers.
So there you go, a velocity element to this, right? A great one is the assumed renewal dates through BuiltWith. It's not 100% accurate, but you can fish for in PLG world, we can fish for renewal dates. I run a play called The Radar, where I'm asking our users if they're using spreadsheets or Salesforce reports for forecasting, because I don't want to have big battles with Gong and Clary for forecasting. I don't. I'd prefer not to. We will do, if we want to have a fight, we can, but I'd prefer not to. They've got lots more ammo than I have, right? And then I want to target people with that problem, but you can't find that data on the JavaScript tag. You can look at it in job descriptions, kind of. But so yeah, there's a timing. That's the when piece, right?
What are you looking for? You said you are looking for the timing is
on one of the plays. This is just one very small play. I'm looking for ICP accounts, and we don't need to jump into our full ICP, that are using spreadsheets and Salesforce reports for forecasting.
Okay,
and you've got to remember that 94% of my 100,000 users that use Scratchpad, they're below the line. They're AEs and SDRs. So they can't buy the forecasting tool. I have to go and sell it to CROs and VPs of sales and ops teams, which is tough.
Okay.
If I know they're using spreadsheets and Salesforce reports, that creates my pain messaging instantly. And I try to avoid competitors we don't want to have a big fight with.
And so you get this information talking to the end user. What's your process?
I know it sounds crazy. I send a blast email. And the blast email says there's a mystery prize. And the mystery prize is a gift card, an upgraded Scratchpad license for 90 days, or I can't remember, there was something else I was offering. Anyone that responds, and we got like hundreds of responses. And then the people that really, really love us, I would then try and turn that into a growth loop. So I would say, hey, would you be down to share this with Steve, your VP of sales? But that's just one play, right? The targeting in that play is I'm targeting A's on free in ICP accounts that are using Scratchpad, right? It narrows the pool down a lot. And then you go from there.
How are you thinking about messaging when you are before setting your outbound play?
So obviously offers are important there. We've kind of talked about offers, giving that aha moment. The first thing I'll always say, I try to think about three types of message as a baseline. This is the start. You're going to rapidly iterate, and this applies to written or spoken messaging. I don't think about channel. You know me, I say channels are relevant all the time.
Yeah.
I just think about written and spoken. And I'm trying to think about problem and feeling first, the emotion of the current state. And I'll give you an example. You've been on a forecasting call, Elric. The VP of sales or CRO says, Elric, where are we at with this? And you start getting a bit hot and you give the blank 1,000-yard stare, deer in the headlights, panicking because you know you don't have the answer, right? I'm playing on that emotion with forecasting, right? That's what gets people to lean in early. You are selling that gut feeling, that emotion. And the way I think about it is, you know, Corporate Bro, obviously everyone knows him. He hasn't been on Salesforce for a long time, right? At all. He's probably never selling SaaS ever again. And the way he's so popular is because he recycles the common stories of things that bond us in sales. And if you ask a data engineer, they have these little memes and jokes as well. You ask a conversion rate optimization person, they have these memes too, like all parts of the org. CFOs have these little moments, these things that bond us. So that's what I'm selling first, the problem plus the feeling. The second thing I'm selling is problem plus proof. And this is customer proof, social proof. I'm very, I'm pretty braggadocious personally. but I don't like to be too braggadocious in emails, but if you have good social proof, good customer proof, your customers do it for you. So one of the things I say is 1,500 plus G2 reviews suggest we've solved this problem, right? And we do have 1,500 G2 reviews, right? I also work with a company called Laudable. They are incredible company. They scrape all your gong calls for gold and customer proof and make it all searchable and easy to use for sales. And then the final thing I think about is proof and product. That's the least important thing. The problem and product. And that comes latest. That's the least important. You need to go through the first two steps before you even think about product.
Let's go back to feeling plus problem. You were talking about the forecast meeting. So how do you come up with a list of ideas that you can try, for example?
This is a tough thing too. I've got much better at sourcing advice from people. Clips from customer calls about how they describe the current state or the status quo. That's always the best. That's where I got the deer in the headlights thing from. There's another one, right? If you think about it, that's the rep and the leader, but what about the leader and the CRO? The CRO is getting hit up all the time going, where are we at? Where are we at? Right? If you don't have that data, how do you answer that question in an educated way? That's another little story that I hear. So it's really customer voice, but also it's general humor. I'm lucky I've been in sales. I've been in these rooms for a decade. It makes it so much easier. I've never sold salespeople before Scratchpad, and it makes my life so much easier. I actually booked a meeting this way. Last day of the month, I sent an email to a guy who was responding. And including the emails, I'm definitely not behind on my meeting target for January. And he booked a meeting, but because he knows that feeling. There's another thing in sales that we believe in is karma, right? If I do something great for you, Elric, something's going to come back to me, right? There's all these little things, these nuances, and you can learn them even if you're not in the industry.
So I'm curious now. So how would you do that with an industry? Because you are talking about with sales leaders, you are familiar, and now that you are sharing that, I remember them, so it's the thing. Yeah, so, but what do you do, for example, because let's say right now, let's start my current company, so we sell to marketing leaders, so how would you do that? You mentioned Gong's recording, that's one. I can do that and listen to the calls and...
We only use Scratchpad call recorder. We don't use Gong.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Sorry, on my side I use Gong.
Gong's great. Gong's honestly awesome.
But so I can listen to the calls recording with our prospect or customers, but what do you think would be helpful also on that?
Interview the persona at your company is a real good one, but you got to ask the right questions because these people often they don't understand what you're trying to do. And the way to jog your memory is like, if you start overly talking about what your product does, stop and go and do more research and think about it. I think that's probably the easiest, that's the lowest lift one. Testing it, right? It's very unlikely that you don't have someone in your network that you could make it easy for them to respond, like ask them a targeted question and they'll tell you whether it's aligned or not. And then the final thing is just, I'm rapidly iterating. I'm doing user gems right now. User gems. We booked 12 meetings with their test data in January. Test data. This is the stuff we did just to prove the business case. We've just gone live. But from that initial outreach, and we did some more with Apollo before, but with that, just that initial outreach, I've iterated 4 or 5 times in my actual cadence and hundreds of times in the messaging in the cadence. And that's just from operating it, running it, getting feedback, getting replies. And it's not always easy to get replies, but it's much easier to get replies from people who are already familiar from you, right? So I think it's a continuous thing. It never stops.
So I'm curious, before you switch to user gems, so you mentioned you were using Apollo. So what did you try before you starting using user gems?
Good question. Scratchpad already did a good job of capturing champion data. But to be included in that list, you had to have performed a growth loop with us. And a growth loop could have been something like left us a LinkedIn post. You see them from time to time on LinkedIn. Left us a G2 review. There's a whole list of them. So we took that initial data, it was about 3,000 people. And then I need to segment for VPs of sales, CROs, and senior director. Like I'm not targeting people below the line. And we initially proved it just using job change tracking through Apollo. It's very good. It's a very good way to prove it. However, to go to the next level, we needed much greater volume of champion data, and we needed a much... To make it much more actionable, I'll say that. Apollo doesn't always make that data as actionable as possible. We had to do a lot of manual stuff to like go fast, and identifying the people was hard. And the way we thought about doing that was to use product data instead of using, hey, you left us a G2 review. So I'm using heavy users, and I don't need to define how we define a heavy user, all the way back to 2019. I'm using users who have used us at 2 or more orgs. So you leave an org, then you download Scratchpad again. And then there's another, and then the final one is you've made a self-serve purchase.
Question. So how do you track that if they use Scratchpad at 2 different companies? Because I imagine that they have 2 different email addresses. So how do you track that?
Yeah. So we have a data guy called Daniel, good guy. He helps me. We are assuming that the name is going to be the same. Now, are we going to be off by 10%? Yes. Probably 20%. Who knows? But that's enough to go, right? And then as that person pops up in my cadence, remember, I'm only targeting above the line people right now. So our actual population of users in each group that have changed jobs to a good fit company that are a good fit for us is very small. So I'm manually validating those people, right, as well afterwards. But the tracking and the enrichment is all handled by user gems, and I literally connected to Apollo this morning, and it's really cool, actually.
I'm working on this specifically also. That's why I was curious, because we just moved to Salesforce a month ago because we are working for a PLG company. The biggest issue we had was tracking customers, actually, because we were using HubSpot CRM before Salesforce. In my previous companies, generally, the way we are tracking, if something we are creating inside the CRM was based on the website domain. So if you have, I don't know, McDonald's starting a free trial with 15 different people, basically you can
match. That's your tenant, yeah.
Exactly. But the way, because it was a PhD company more focused on the user, it was based on every time that a free trial was created, you had like an account created. So it means that you could have like 25 McDonald's inside the CRM. So now we are working on the on cleaning that. And it's easier to track that because before it was impossible to know who were still customers. But now we are using Apollo to track that, and it's still work in progress. So
we need a therapy group for SDR leaders trying to figure out outbound and PLG, because we're swimming in like this. Another, you know, we're talking about little micro stories you can use.
Yep.
If I send you an email with a subject line saying, "You're drowning in data, aren't you, Elric?"
I am.
I get your world, right? But yeah, that's a very common issue. If anyone's fixed that without making ops hate you, please let me or Elric know.
I'm curious, and yeah, that's when I would say the data is ready with Salesforce, and we are going to obviously to scale, fat to scale, because I know it's a play that works, so I know it's going to be quick to focus on that. Actually, something I found out because we sell to marketing leaders, but we have so we are selling to B2C companies most of the time. It's I would say the main. I would say 70% of our customers, and then 30% of the customers are B2B, but marketing agencies. And what I found out by using previous customers is, like you were saying, using the data of the product, there is customers inside the account of the customer. You have the marketing agency that helps them. So I know who is a marketing agency. I can reach out to them, and I can see they are not customer. And so I can say, hey, I know you are working with them and using Agora Pulse, and then I can start a conversation. So that's a play I didn't follow about until 2 days ago, because I start seeing this pattern and I say, oh, I think that could be interesting to test also.
This is why being an SDR today, or even a leader, whatever, doesn't matter, doing outbound today is so much more like being like a DJ, right? You're not a scientist. All these people that talk about it being science are lying to themselves. It's experimental, but it's not scientific. What you're actually doing is coming up with a hypothesis on who should be your future customer, and you're testing it as fast as you can with the low, and usually you test the ones that have the lowest barrier to entry.
Exactly.
And this is why, that going all the way back to rule number one, the first goal should be to try and find efficiency in that audience, in that targeting, in those offers, in those tactics. And then you can always add volume at that point. But yeah, what you just did was you read the room and you picked a tune and you hoped that the people listening danced. That's what you did. And that's why it's more like being a DJ.
And do you know where it's coming from, this thing? So for me, it's since I've read like Financial Prospecting 6 years ago for the first time, for me, the book is really good on the mindset, but there is one thing from the book that I'm still figuring out is the pyramid of familiarity. And every time I'm prospecting, I want to know if there is someone at the company who is already familiar with the product or use it or bought it in the past. And that's something I'm realizing, that at all the companies I'm working with generally is outbound. They think outbound is, you have a list of 300 accounts and you contact them without prioritizing them based on familiarity or other topics. And that's fair. Here I have, I would say, the chance of we already have like 8,000 customers, something like that. So why I'm going to talk to accounts that never heard of us, never use the product, they're not familiar with what we do. So it's easier to go talk to a previous customer or the champion.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing that we suffer from, and I think probably a few other orgs do too, I know Apollo do because I see it, is there's lots of growth in these accounts that can be driven through PLG in a more efficient way, like the most efficient way. And no one's even trying to do that internal account growth with PLG. Well, there's growth loops built into the product, and those should work, but there may need some outbound, especially if you're looking at, you've got BTL users and ATL users, right? Someone needs to tell the so what to the ATL, what's in it for them, and that can be done in partnership with your BTL users. The best play I came up with at Scratchpad was a referral play, where the BTL, usually an AE with clout, President's Club, been there a while or whatever, I would give them a free upgrade in Scratchpad if they sent one email to their VP of sales. And that was our, and I would only target them when they were hitting friction in our product from updates. And that was the play that kind of, I suppose, paid my bills and kept me employed this year.
And that's another play that we are going to test because we don't have an account management play, FA play motion here yet. So, but we, the first account manager is going to start, and that's another play we will try because we have, so we are, the product we are using, it's not, sorry, we are selling, sorry, it's not like something you don't have upsell. It generally is called sale or the product is, we don't have add-on on top of it. So if you have five users on a five team, well, basically you need to contact the other country, for example. And so that's what we are going to try. We have customers who are big brands, and we can, instead of, so what we could do here, it's an expansion play. And basically it's going after, if they are present in 40 countries, we are going to map the 40 countries and going after the 40 countries.
If you're friendly with product, they can enable that for you. They can enable that growth loop in product. And as long as you get the signal, like that's, I think that's the future. I think all outbound will start with a personalized product or web experience. Like an aligned, right? Like a page and then a product experience. I think that's the future of outbound.
Right enough, having a different experience based on the industry of the prospect. But yeah, that's something, yeah, being personalized on this, I think would be big.
It's sometimes really, really relevant. Depends on what space you're in.
Well, Harry, I think for today, that was pretty a good introduction of outbound. Like I said with you before recording this, I think next time we will do more practical sessions. So I'm super curious to know, to learn more about your permissions lab. I know you are working on the V2 of this, and also your process research, because like I told you, I was reading on your website a research you've done on a podcast, and I think your notes are really detailed, so I will be curious to try to understand your thought process behind your research. So,
of course, I will do. It's a big challenge, but you got to make it simple. I appreciate it. Elric, I just want to say thank you to you. You do a lot shining light on SDRs, not just their leaders, not the VPs, not the founders. You have the top SDRs, and you give them a stage and ask some great questions. And that is a... we didn't see much of that. So thank you.
Thanks for the feedback. I really appreciate that. And I'm glad also to have you today on the show, because you also, I think in terms of outbound, you are doing a great job of educating people on outbound, and we need more people like you. So thank you.
You go crazy after a decade plus chasing strangers for meetings.
For me, it's outbound. I'm still learning. So I'm still a student of the game, and I'm not really, I would say, I'm bored about it. So it's every year is a different challenge. So it's.
I agree. Thank you, man.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode. I see you on the next one. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So for Spotify, to leave a review, what you can do is you can use your phone, then go on the Spotify app, then you go to the SDR Game page, and then at the top of the page, you can leave a review. It's a 5-star review if you enjoyed the episode, obviously. And then if you are listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts, feel free also to leave a review on your app. Thanks for listening, and I see you on the next episode.